What's it like to go from a small Oregon farm to the far corners of the world? Globetrotting journalist Nicholas Kristof tells his story in the new book, Chasing Hope, A Reporter's Life. Nicholas is a two-time Pulitzer Prize winner who's worked for the New York Times almost continuously since 1984 as a reporter, foreign correspondent, bureau chief, and now columnist. With his wife, Cheryl Wu Dunn, he's written four best-selling books, including the number one New York Times bestseller, Half the Sky. Our curator, Adam Grant, says Chasing Hope is a gripping memoir by a world-class reporter. Here's Nicholas to share five of his key insights.
Hi, I'm Nicholas Kristof, mostly known as Nick. I'm a farm boy from Oregon, a globe-trotting columnist for the New York Times, and a dad and a maker of wine and cider, and also a hopeful guy. So let me share five insights from my new memoir, Chasing Hope, A Reporter's Life. The first three you'll see are from my years covering China, and the last two are a bit more general. So insight number one came to me when I was covering the Tiananmen democracy movement in China in 1989. And I think it's a bit relevant to us Americans today at a time when democracy is under challenge. And it's this: you most appreciate democracy when you don't have it. I look back at 1989 as the Tiananmen democracy movement was unfolding, and I'm kind of embarrassed that I was often a little bit kind of disdainful, a little bit scornful of some of those democracy protesters because they were peasants from the countryside or less educated workers. And I wrote periodically, well, they say they're for democracy, but they can't really define the kind of democracy they want. They can't describe the institutions that they would create, the guardrails they would create to make it work. And that was true. But on that terrible night of June 3rd to 4th, 1989, when the People's Liberation Army sent troops to Tiananmen Square to massacre the student protesters, the group that I was in, I will never forget the courage of those uneducated peasants and workers. I was cowering. My notebook is still stained from the sweat of fear as the troops opened fire on that crowd that I was in. And the bravest people that night were these peasants from the countryside who were rickshaw drivers. And whenever there was a lull in the firing, they would drive toward the troops to pick up the bodies of the kids who'd been killed or injured and put them on the back of the rickshaws and then rush them to the hospitals. And there was a narrow two-lane road leading to Tiananmen Square that the troops were using to send truckloads of troops to kill more students. And a bus driver saw the convoy of truckloads of troops arriving, and he hurriedly parked his bus across the road to block it. And he turned the engine off, he stepped down. This is the night, late on the night of June 3rd. It's dark. There's a grassy verge on both sides of the road. And an officer stepped out of the lead truck and told him, "Move the bus." And the bus driver, this salt-of-the-earth, middle-aged driver, he said, "No." And the officer pointed his sidearm at the bus driver and said, "Move the bus." And the bus driver, he turned off the engine. He had the keys in his hand. He looked at those truckloads of troops, and suddenly he hurled the bus keys as far as he could into that high grass beside the road. Now, that bus driver and those rickshaw drivers, they might not have been able to define democracy, but they were willing to risk their lives to die for it. And I think that's precisely because they didn't enjoy democracy, they knew how valuable it was for themselves, for their children. And I think we in this country have so much we can learn from them. Insight number two is to be skeptical, even of victims, even of the good guys. You know, that massacre in Beijing probably claimed 400 to 800 lives, maybe 5,000 people injured. But there were a lot of reports, including from supposed eyewitnesses, that tens of thousands of people had been killed, that Tiananmen Square was knee-deep in blood. I knew that was not true because I had been there. I had seen people massacred, but it wasn't many thousands of people. And I realized then that when people have seen terrible things, they want to fight back. And so they exaggerate. They say they saw things in person when in fact they only heard rumors about it. And so that is something that I think is really hard for us as journalists to do and for all people to do, which is to be skeptical not only of those committing the massacres, not only of the bad guys, but also of the victims, also of the good guys. And that's a lesson I've tried to carry with me over the years. Insight number three is that whenever you think you figured it all out, when you feel you just nailed it, figured out a really difficult problem, look out. That's when you're probably about to fall flat on your nose and realize that the world is way more complicated than we think. I learned that in particular in China when my wife and I moved into the Beijing Bureau Chief residence. And we knew it was bugged, partly because we had a Chinese friend who was working part-time translating conversations in our building, which was housing journalists and diplomats. But we didn't know where the bugs were. And then a friend pointed to this little cubby hole in the wall covered with a screen and said, "That's where the bugs are." And so I thought, I'll get to the bottom of this. I pried off the screen and there's all this electronic gadgetry there. And I was so proud of myself that I recognized the Chinese characters on the device in front. And the Chinese characters read, "Electronic sound carrying device." Wow. I've nailed it. You know, I just arrived in Beijing. I figured out where the bugs are. And just then a friend arrived at the front door and we found out what an electronic sound carrying device is in Chinese. It's a doorbell buzzer. And, you know, that was a useful lesson for us in China, trying to cover more than a billion people, different language, different culture, different history. And I hope that it modified the hubris that we sometimes bring to foreign countries, this tendency to rush around and declare what is happening with great authority. But I think it's also a useful lesson, not just for journalists, not just for foreign correspondents, but for all citizens, that invariably, everything is more complicated than it seems. And whenever you're too sure of yourself and you've come down with one simple, glib solution, look out. It's probably way more complicated than that. Insight number four is that we all have the power to make a difference. You know, I talk to a lot of people, young people in particular, who feel kind of paralyzed. They see all these problems around them and they just feel they can't make a difference. They want to leave a better world, but they don't see how they can do it. And I understand that, but I think that's actually kind of wrong. See, people think they have to solve a problem to make a difference. And look, it's hard to solve a problem. There are millions of girls abroad who need an education. And we're not going to get them all schooled. But I think that it's a mistake to think that we have to solve a problem in its entirety to make a difference. In Chasing Hope, I write about my dad, a World War II refugee from Eastern Europe. And he survived attacks from the Nazis, who killed some members of his family, and from the Soviet communists, who killed other members of his family. He was in a concentration camp. He was almost executed. But in the end, he was able to help with to go to France with the help of a French diplomat. And then he wanted to come to the U.S. because he thought that that would be the land of opportunity for him. And in 1952, a couple of families in Portland, Oregon, and the First Presbyterian Church in Portland, they sponsored his way to the U.S. Now, that did not solve the global refugee problem. It didn't make a dent in the global refugee problem. But it was completely transformative for my dad, And for me, I exist only because of the help they provided. And that's the kind of thing that any of us can do. We can help an individual refugee family. We can help a particular girl in a country like Ghana or Tanzania or Zimbabwe get an education for maybe less than $100 a year. So never feel powerless. You do have the opportunity to make a difference, to change lives. That's an incredible gift that we all enjoy. Insight number five is that side by side with the worst of humanity, you invariably find the very best. You see, I've spent a career covering war and massacres, disease and poverty. And so when people first meet me, they invariably think I'm going to be, you know, this really depressing sort of journalistic Eeyore. And the truth is that I've actually emerged from covering war and genocide kind of upbeat. And that's because while I've seen the worst that people can do, and it's real, there is evil out there, I've also seen the human capacity for goodness and decency and strength. And I have seen an arc of moral progress in my time as a journalist. I've seen apartheid collapse. I've seen Eastern Europe and communism there collapse. I've seen authoritarian countries on the right from Taiwan and South Korea, Indonesia. I've seen those authoritarian regimes collapse. Maybe the worst thing that can happen to somebody is to lose a child. When I graduated from college, 11% of children died before the age of five. Now we're down to a little more than 3%, the lowest in human history. When I was a kid, a majority of human beings had always been illiterate. Now we're pushing 90% adult literacy. Every day, another 300,000 people roughly emerge from extreme poverty. But it's not just those numbers. You know, even more, it's just what I've seen. And let me leave you with a story of a friend of mine in Pakistan, Mukhtar Mai. And Mukhtar was a young village woman who was sentenced by a village council to be gang raped as punishment for something that her brother supposedly had done. And then the village council carried out that sentence. They gang raped her. And they expected that Mukhtar would then kill herself out of shame. But instead, she prosecuted her attackers. She sent them to prison. And then she used compensation money to start the first school in her village. And then she enrolled the children of her attackers in that school because she believed that the best way to chip away at the kind of misogyny and cruelty that she had experienced was to educate people. And so you go to that little village of Mirwala and you talk to Mukhtar and you talk to the children of her attackers and you understand absolutely all around us we have unbearable evil oppressing people. But you also see that side by side with that evil, when people are really tested, you invariably find the best of humanity as well. And that is what I take away from my career. I've seen the worst, but even more, I've seen a human capacity for goodness and strength and courage and decency. And we all have the capacity to tap into that and make this a better world. So thank you so much for listening. In times like this, we could all use a little bit of uplift. And I hope you enjoy Chasing Hope. Thank you.
Thank you, Nicholas. That was five big ideas from Chasing Hope, A Reporter's Life by Nicholas Kristof. I'm Michael Kovnat. Have a great day.